Each month here on RNIB Connect Radio, we take a look at science. We're taking the white coats off, if you like. We're looking at it in everyday speak, de-jargonising science, and looking at how it's being made more accessible for people with visual impairments to learn, to gain an interest in, possibly even a career in science. Now, today I'm joined by my three experts round the table once again, so let's introduce them to you. First of all, we have Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris Edmonds from University of Liverpool and Cockcroft Institute. I'm a lecturer in physics.
We have Rob.
Hello, I'm Rob Appleby. I'm a physicist at the University of Manchester and the Cockcroft Institute.
And we have Robin.
Hello, I'm Robin Watson. I work for Bolton Sensory Support Service as a teacher of the visually impaired.
Thanks, guys. Okay, well, let's delve straight into this month's, I don't want to say lecture, because it's more of a roundtable discussion. Chris, what are we off to today?
So we're going to be talking about radiotherapy and how that fits in with particle accelerators and the Large Hadron Collider.
Okay, now we've spoken about the collider in the past. We mentioned particle accelerators as well. Just remind us what a particle accelerator is, first of all, because I suppose this is going to be one of the main components we're going to be talking about here.
Absolutely. So a particle accelerator is one of these machines that makes the tiny little particles that everything around us is made of travel very fast, in fact, almost as fast as light itself. And there's many applications when we do this. So we could potentially treat cancer, or we can smash these particles together and learn a bit about the origins of the universe.
So most people in the modern age who are diagnosed with cancer will receive a mixture of chemotherapy, surgery, and particle therapy. So the particle therapy is using a particle accelerator to create essentially a beam of particles that we irradiate the tumor with inside the patient. It's amazing they're able to control particle beams to such an extent nowadays that we can direct very precise beams of particles and send them to a precise location inside a person to exactly where the tumor is. So we can put a dose of energy into a tumor and shrink the tumor as a result.
We've talked about particles in previous shows. I always imagine them as being very random, having to be contained because they move about all over the place. But we're now at the stage where they can be controlled. I mean, how is that done?
If we build very precise accelerators with very precise setups of magnets, we're able to create a very, very well-defined pulse of particles that all travel in the same direction, all have very similar speed, and are all pointing exactly where we want them to go. So you have very, very precise magnets, and very, very precise imaging to understand exactly where to pinpoint this dose of particles. So it's remarkable how well we can control particle beams to make particle therapy a reality.
Chris, when we're talking about this particle beam therapy or particle treatments, what are we talking about in its essence and the basics?
Ultimately radiation, so this transmission of energy as particles or as light. And if we're going to look at this story, we have to go right back. So we go back to the 1890s, to the very discovery of radiation. We had people like Wilhelm Röntgen, we had Marie Curie, we had Henri Becquerel, and at this point they discovered that some things were radioactive. And very quickly they started to ask questions as to what could be done with that. And the reality was, people just didn't know. But they were very experimental. They were willing to give things a go. One of the first possible uses that sprung to mind was to maybe try and treat cancer. And it wasn't something that they just arrived at randomly. It was from them noticing that when they put these radioactive sources in their pockets, it was actually causing a lot of damage. So we had a lot of inflammation. We had sores, essentially. And once they'd recognized this potential to actually influence tissue with radioactive sources, then they started to apply these constructively.
If I was to say, what is radiation then? What causes radiation? If it was a tangible thing, what would it be like?
So radiation can be caused by a number of different methods. If you look at your kind of GCSE type physics, then people talk about alpha, beta and gamma. So it can be a nuclei that's emitted. It can be an electron that's traveling, or it can be a photon, or gamma ray.
Back at the start when we talked about this, I said, you know, there's good and there's bad radiation, because when I hear that word, I first of all think of things like Chernobyl and bad radiation, but we're turning it into good radiation as well. And I suppose when we talk about targeting things like retinoblastoma and things like that, so there are good and bad radiations, or is it just the way we control it?
It's just all to do with how we control it. So all radiation has the potential to be good or bad. In the case of any kind of radiotherapy or particle therapy, what we're trying to do is do as much damage as possible to a tumor whilst doing as little damage to the healthy tissue. When we look at the history of radiotherapy and we look at how people have tried to apply this stuff, there's this really iconic photo, and I think it's from the 60s, I might be wrong, but it's a little child. He's 3 years of age and his name is Gordon Isaacs, and he has two tumors, one in each of his eyes. And the therapy at the time had been to get rid of the cancer. You just use surgery, you get rid of the eyes, that's it, problem solved. But someone at the time, they had access to a particle accelerator, and he suggested what they could actually do is shine a beam of electrons into Gordon's eyes and actually destroy the cancer using this. This is exactly what they did, and it saved Gordon's sight. So what we've done since this period here is to work on new forms of radiotherapy. So just kind of opening up this toolbox, if you like, that clinicians have available to them. So we have had the advent of computer tomography, or CT, so these devices that can be used to construct detailed maps of what's going on inside of a patient. We have MRI that does something a little bit similar, but not quite the same. So we have a really good idea of where a tumour is, but we've just got to be better at kind of reaching that tumour.
Is the next stage then, I suppose, proton beam therapy? That's probably the one that people may associate as well with the latest step, perhaps?
So protons have been around for quite a while, and the UK now has two proton therapy centres in Manchester and London, which will treat around 700 or so patients a year. We've treated patients with protons in the UK before these centres opened. In the northwest, where we all work, we have the Clatterbridge Centre, which treats eye tumours using protons since the 1980s.
In order then to house the proton beam therapy equipment, does that mean they have to have very bespoke structures because they are so new?
Well, absolutely. At the Christie Proton Therapy Centre, we generate fast-moving protons in an accelerator called a cyclotron, which is a very heavy, expensive piece of kit. It's then taken by beam lines consisting of magnets that we talked about from the Large Hadron Collider into what's called a gantry, which is a large three-storey structure that rotates around a patient, delivering the proton beam to precisely the point it's required, where we scan or raster the proton beam using very, very precise magnets over the volume you wish to irradiate with the proton beam in a very, very precise and controlled way. It's incredible engineering.
We are talking about some pretty impressive pieces of kit and some pretty impressive structures. But what is it actually like, Robin, to walk into somewhere, you know, where radiotherapy is taking place? It sounds vast, but it also sounds quite minimalist as well.
Yeah, so these machines are housed in hospitals, and in order to get into the room where you would have your therapy, you'd walk down a narrow corridor, and when you got into the room, it'd be obviously a sterile environment with the machine based in the middle of the room. It's got lots of clean lines and lots of shiny plastic to cut down on contamination and things like that. And the machine's quite impressive in size, so probably about 2.5 meters high, shaped almost like a C shape. So the particle accelerator is housed in the main body, and it's got an arm coming out of the top, if you imagine like the top of a letter C. And that arm's got a circle on top of it, which is where the particles come down and where they are angled using a magnet so that they can be aimed into the right part of the person's body. So the patient would be put on a couch, and that couch is fully adjustable, so it can be moved up and down, left and right, so that the particles can be aimed at exactly the point that is needed. Depending on where that is, the patient might be secured on that couch so that they're not going to move during the therapy. And once they're comfortable and positioned in the right place, then the radiographer would leave the room and the treatment would start.
Obviously, this is very targeted. So if the individual is kind of strapped in place or just has to lie in place, does that mean everything moves round about them?
Yes, yeah, so the arm that comes out of the machine moves around a pivot and circles the couch, so it passes above and at the sides and below the person's body to make sure that the particles are targeted at the right area, and they're targeted from every angle as well. And a patient would probably be expected to have this treatment every day over a number of weeks, rather than all of the radiation being given in one big dose. It's spread out over a number of treatments.
I think I've definitely got a better understanding of what it looks like now. Thank you very much, Robin. We will be back again each month with more accessible science. To Robin and to Chris, thanks to you all for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.